Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
Well, hello and welcome, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Voices of Courage show. It's really great to have you here today. My goodness, we sure get a lot of positive feedback from our audience, and I really want to thank all of you for that. Today, we have a subject that is near and dear to all of our hearts. We're talking about the courage to walk into the unknown with love. Love is our topic today. And we have a love expert. So listen, if you're out there and you're wondering, how do you find love? What is love? What is true love? You know, maybe you've been in some stop-start relationships. Maybe your relationship that you're in is okay, but it's not on fire. You don't feel the passion anymore. Maybe you're in a place where you just want to find your soulmate. Or maybe you've been in a place where you've been really hurt by love and you're a little afraid to step back into it. Well, today, we have an expert on our show that's going to be able to take you into the depth of the understanding and meeting of maybe what's stopping you from having it, or maybe help you to up-level your life, up-level your thinking, up-level your feeling, so that you can have more love, more joy, more happiness in your life. I think we all need this, especially what we're going through in this day and age, right? We need a little more love in our life. And, you know, I've learned that wisdom is great to have, information is good to have, but when we have love, we have everything. And that's what we're talking about today. So stay tuned, and I'm going to introduce you to my guest right after this break. Okay. Welcome back, everybody. And as I promised, I have a very special guest today. Ariel, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ken. It's good to see you.
That's so good to see you. You know, we were talking, we go back a long way. Well, we'll talk about that in a second. But let me give you a formal introduction. So Ariel Ford is a celebrated love and relationship expert. She's the author and she's a speaker, and her mission is to help people find love, keep love, and most importantly, be love. She's a gifted writer and award-winning author of 11 nonfiction books, including the international bestseller, The Soulmate Secret, Manifest the Love of Your Life with Law of Attraction, and we have a new book out that we're going to be talking about today. Ariel, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's so good to see you.
So good to see you too. And like I said, we've been around for a while. You know, it's interesting. I was looking at you today and thinking, wow, we're both silver hairs now. Okay. We didn't start out that way, but we are now. So hopefully we've got a little wisdom along the way. So tell me about your new book. Tell me about what inspired you to write it.
Well, I didn't want to write it. That's where we'll start. I had never had writing a novel on my to-do list ever. And yet the book came to me like a movie in my head. And it wouldn't go away. I kept pushing it away, saying, go away. I don't want to do this, but it wouldn't go away. And so what happened was I got an email one day from masterclass.com, and they were advertising a class with Dan Brown, you know, the author of The Da Vinci Code and some other good books. And I thought, oh, I love Dan Brown. Wouldn't it be fun to, you know, listen to him, see what he has to say? And the course was called How to Write a Thriller. I thought, well, I'm never going to write a thriller, but I'm going to take the course. And in the meantime, while all this was happening, this movie is unfolding in my head. I can see that it's a novel. I don't want to do it, but I'm going to take the Dan Brown course anyway. And the third episode, he was talking about location as a character in the book, just as Florence, Italy was a character in the Da Vinci Code. And it started to trigger something in me because I knew that if I ever did write this book, it takes place in La Jolla, California and Rishikesh, India. And I thought, well, the book won't go away. I'm going to challenge God and see if I'm supposed to write it. And I said, okay, God, if I'm really supposed to write this book, I'm going to manifest a trip to India. And at that point, a business class ticket to India was $7,000. I thought, I'm so safe. That's so not going to happen. And 48 hours later, I had the ticket in my hand. So I went to India.
Oh, my goodness. You know, that's amazing.
Talk about manifestation. I was shocked, just shocked. And as soon as I got to Rishikesh, the things I'd been seeing in my head, the scenes and people and places in this story, I was tripping over. I was actually finding what I was imagining. And so for the last 4.5 years, I have been writing this thriller. It's a spiritual romantic thriller called The Love Thief, and it's finally done.
I love it. Well, listen, I'm going to put it up on screen here real quick so our audience can see it. We might have to move over a little, Ariel, there to the other way. The other way. There you go. Yeah, so The Love Thief is the name of the book, and it's about love, right? We're talking about love. Is that accurate?
Well, it's about love and what love isn't. So it's the story of a 38-year-old woman who has spent her entire life wanting to have the white picket fence, looking for Prince Charming, wanting to have kids and a dog, you know, fully expecting to be the greatest mom that ever lived. And finally, right before she turns 38, she meets Prince Charming and she falls madly in love and he proposes and it looks like everything's going to be peachy. But what happens is he breaks her heart, crushes her dreams, steals her money. She nearly dies in a car accident, and then karma intervenes. So the book has this amazing revenge subplot, and in the end, karma reigns supreme. So it's a love story. It's about love lost and eventually love found. It's a suspense thriller. And it's also a travelogue because it takes place in India. So it's quite an unusual story. A friend of mine said that you'll finish this book so completely satisfied, you'll want to have a proverbial cigarette.
Oh, my goodness. This, you know, I don't smoke, but it sounds like a thriller. It sounds amazing. I look forward to reading it. Yeah, I haven't read a good fiction book in a while, so this is timely. Awesome. And all right, so what, you know, you had a journey here, a journey into this book, and so what I'm hearing, there's a lot of synchronicity showing up, miracles, magic, lots of stuff showing up for that. Why is that? Why did that happen for you?
Well, why? I don't know why the book happened for me. All I can think of is that before I came into this body in this life, I somehow agreed to write this book because, like I said, writing a novel was never, ever, ever on my to-do list. Never imagined it. And what I discovered is there's a good reason it wasn't on my list, because even though I've written 11 nonfiction books and I can write nonfiction blindfolded with my hands tied behind my back, the only similarity to writing fiction versus nonfiction, the only similarity is they both involve words. Other than that, there's nothing from my nonfiction world to inform how to write a novel. And I didn't know this going into it. So it was a form of torture on a lot of levels. I had a lot of early readers. I had a couple of book doctors. I had all kinds of input. And it was the hardest thing I've ever done, but on a lot of levels, the most satisfying. Would I do it again? I don't know. Somebody'd have to pay me a lot of money to do it again because it's so hard, but I'm happy that I did it. And one thing that you mentioned is that there was a lot of mystery and magic and synchronicities. My heroine in the book, Holly, is a non-believer, total 100% non-believer. She was raised by a new age baby boomer mom who goes on Esther Hick Law of Attraction cruises, put dream catchers over her bed when she was a baby and surrounded her with crystals. And she is a reaction to that. She doesn't believe in any of this. So we go on the journey with her as this kind of stuff happens to her on a regular basis in India and starts to change what she believes in. And I didn't know it was going to turn out like that. You know, I just kept seeing this movie and following the movie. And, you know, I was kind of shocked when it turned out that Holly was a non-believer.
How close do some of the the experiences, how close are those experiences maybe to some of the experiences that you've had? And listen, don't answer that yet. I got to take a break, but when we come back, I'd like to really connect into that. So we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Now, welcome everybody. Welcome back. This is your host, Kendi Foster, Voices of Courage, today with Arielle Ford, best-selling author with a brand new book, The Love Thief. And how close does the love thief track some of your experiences in your life?
Pretty much every magical, woo-woo, weird experience I've ever had is in this book. Every bit of wisdom I read from the hundreds, if not thousands, of self-help books that I've read is in this book, woven in one way or another, because our heroine, her life is in ruins. She's at the bottom of the pit. But when she goes to India, she ends up meeting the owner of a spiritual bookstore who is a retired professor of counseling psychology. And he becomes what I call her love walla. He becomes her go-to guy for sage advice and wisdom and healing. And so he's a composite character of all the teachers that I've had with my husband's personality.
Wow. So, all right. So let me ask you this. You got the love thief in the book. I hear he's a despicable character. I haven't got to read it yet. But so does that track with some of the experiences that you've had in life with love?
Well, yes. And when I first started writing the book and this evil, nasty character showed up, he is also a composite of three other men that three of my girlfriends were either engaged or married to. So I really was writing from that perspective that, you know, this was the person I created was somebody that I knew well from other people's nightmares. And it wasn't until after I finished the book that this memory surfaced of my boyfriend from when I was 30, who I totally had forgotten about, who is a toxic narcissist. But somehow I figured, since now that I'm 70 and it was so long ago, it couldn't be about me. But they say you write what you know. And so I would say every page of this book is influenced by my own experiences.
Wow. Aurel, when you were in India, you know, a lot of people go to India and have great experiences. Some people don't have such great experiences. Did you fall in love with India, or how did that impact you as a result of being there and going in this transformation?
I fell in love with India from the very first second I got there. I remember my very first trip, Deepak Chopra had invited me to New Delhi to attend his daughter's wedding. We had been working together for a long time then. And people tried to warn me. They said, oh, when you exit the New Delhi airport, you're going to get hit with a wave like you never have of crazy energy and sights and sounds you've never seen. And it's going to be terrifying. Well, I walked out of the customs area, and what I walked into was hundreds of brightly dressed saris and turbans and all these people with big smiles on their faces and the noises of the little tuk-tuk little cars going by and the sounds and the smells. And the smells are really overwhelming because it's like kerosene. That's what New Delhi smells like. It smells like kerosene. And then there's smog on top of it. And the second that all hit me, I was a goner. And I've now been back 9 times.
Wow. Well, yeah, I was just reading. New Delhi's the most polluted city in the world right now. Yeah, number one.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, listen, we've all gone through broken hearts. We've gone through, I don't know anybody that hasn't gone through some toxic relationships to get to their soulmate. Is that part of this book? Are we going to learn about that and maybe how to transition those people in our own lives, or what do we have there?
Yeah, one of the major themes of the book is really what is love, and more importantly, what love isn't, and how to discern the difference, and why you should be discerning the difference. I've spent the last 26 years as a student of love. I wasn't a student of love before I got married, but once I got married, I discovered I had like zero partnership skills. Yeah. And all my happily ever after dreams were, you know, bombing all over the place. And I had to get real, like, well, what do you mean? I've married my soulmate and he doesn't fulfill my every hope, wish, and dream and need? What is that about? And so my heroine, Holly, you know, she's a dreamer. She's not a believer, but she's a dreamer until it crashes down around her. And this love walla, this bookstore owner, really guides her into understanding what love is.
Wow. Well, you know, you've gone through a lot of transformations in your life since we've known each other a while. I've seen a few of them, and you come out with love. And I'm wondering, let's go back to that question you asked. So what is love? What does love mean to you today as a result of going and learning, you know, what you need to learn?
Yes. So like most people on the planet, I thought love was a feeling. I thought love was the state of being in love. And the state of being in love is so far away from being what love is. What that is nature's greatest drug high. It's nature's greatest drug trick to get us to procreate and get the species or keep the species going. But it actually has no bear on what love really is. What I've come to understand and truly believe is that love is a behavior. Love is a choice. Love is a decision. Love is an action. Love is a way of being. And while there are good feelings that come and go, often many times a day, love is not essentially a feeling. So I would say that was the biggest transformation I had when I began to understand that love is a behavior.
So once we understand love is a behavior, then we have to look at our own behaviors as to love. And a lot of times we want to look at other people's behaviors. Well, you're not doing what I need to do. You're showing up this way. You're showing up that way. So how do we bring that back to ourselves and realize? Because there's so many people that are in relationships. Look, the divorce rate's what, 50%, something like that, some parts of the country. You know, what is this about, right? What are we, if it's an action, what do we need to do?
So everybody knows that 50% of first marriages end in divorce. What nobody knows is that 62% of second marriages and 71% of third marriages end in divorce.
Wow. So it goes up.
It goes up. And the reason for that is not because you keep marrying the same bad person over and over again. It's because you haven't grown and changed.
That's it.
And the truth is, other human beings are not here to make us happy. We are each personally responsible for our own happiness. And when we have the right life partner, that's icing on the cake. But they're not here to make you happy.
Yeah, when we have the right life partner, like I know I do and I know you do, the partner also realizes these truths, and they don't look to you to make them happy either. So they're tuning into their own joy, their own happiness. And of course, we love to help each other and be a service to each other, but it's not about looking out for somebody. You're going to make me happy or I'm going to leave you. That's a
right. thing. And the paradox of it is that part of what makes a great relationship work is that when you're devoted to your partner and you're committed, that their happiness is as important to you as your own. But you are not the cause of their happiness. You are here as their support. And sometimes that support is being the number one cheerleader. And other times that support is holding their hand and letting them vent the difficult times. But for those of you out there watching who are coaches, whatever you do, never, ever, ever, ever become the coach to your spouse. If your spouse needs a coach, go hire one. But don't you become the coach to your spouse, because that will kill your sex life for sure.
That's such a great advice, Ariel. I know when I first met Judy, I came to her and I wanted to process some of my old relationships with her. And she looked like me, let me cross-eyed and said, I don't process relationships. I don't do anything like that. Go get a therapist. Go find a coach. That's not me. And of course, at the time, I was thinking, wow, maybe there's something wrong with her. She won't go deep with me, right? But then I finally came around. I finally realized she really knew what she was talking about. Listen, I got to take a break. When we come back, I want to take a little deeper dive into narcissists that we fall in love with. And I know that, I don't know if that's in the book. I got a feeling it is, The Love Thief, but we'll be right back. We'll talk about that. This is Ken D. Foster again with the Voices of Courage show. I'm going to bring my guest right back, Ariel Ford. But listen, I haven't done this in a while, and I want to really let you know that we have some amazing sponsors on our show. We've got UK Health Radio. We got Triangle Health Magazine, BBS Radio, E360 TV, Flix TV. Many people that have helped us to really make this show take it to the next level. So I just want to give them a shout out. Also, AMFM247, thank you for all you do. And now I'd like to get back to my guest, Ariel Ford. All right, Ariel, listen, we do fall in love, some of us, with narcissists, right? Maybe we're the narcissist in the relationship at the beginning. All right, in the book, The Love Thief, are we talking within a narcissist at all in this book? And if so, how do we become aware of it and move out of it?
Yeah, so the villain in my book is a toxic narcissist. Some people might even say he's a full-blown sociopath. And Maya Angelou had this great line that said, when somebody shows you who they are, believe them. And that's almost should be like a billboard. Anytime you're in a new relationship with somebody and it seems too good to be true, things are moving at warp speed, super fast. They're whispering in your ear everything you ever wanted to hear, because narcissists tend to be charming, attractive, charismatic, and they also prey particularly on smart, successful single women. Women who have seemed to have it all except for the relationship. And they know how to talk to somebody like that and wine and dine them and romance them until they're hooked. And then the real version of them shows up and it can be very, very unpleasant.
Well, it can be unpleasant. It can be toxic and it can be dangerous for some women. And, you know, so it's important to remember, you know, to look for those signs if that's going on. When you were in India, you got a nadi reading. First of all, let's tell my audience what a nadi reading is and how did it impact you?
So 5,000 years ago, there were some sages who wrote down the future of people that would live in the future. So they got these palm leaves and then they wrote down these forecasts, you know, everything about when they were born, where they would live, what kind of work they would do, all the elements of their life from birth to death. They would write them on the leaves. And now in India, these leaves still exist and there are nadi readers. These are priests who read the ancient Tamil language on the leaves. And the way that you can get one of these readings, it used to be you had to go to India and meet with them in person. In the book, I talk about a man who now has this set up so you can do it online. And we were taken to have naughty readings with Deepak Chopra on one of our trips with him. And it was absolutely spectacular because before you arrive for the reading, at least our reading, the only thing they knew about us was they had our left thumbprint. Didn't know what sex we were, didn't have our name, our date of birth, none of that. And we had the naughty reading in a cement block room that had a single light bulb hanging from the ceiling. It was 6 hours in the jungle from the nearest city. And of course, there was no internet. There wasn't even internet back in the days when we had this reading. And so you sit down for the reading and you have this priest and then you have a translator. So the priest's name was Ravi. The translator's name was Babu. And he would listen to the priest speak in ancient Tamil. Then he would speak in English and try and explain what was going on. And it was absolutely crazy. So when you go there for the reading, they have a bundle full of these leaves and they have to figure out which leaf is yours. So they ask you lots and lots and lots of questions. And every time you say yes, they ask you the next question. And if after 12 yeses, you say no, then that's not your leaf and they go to the next leaf. So I had my reading. It was absolutely spectacular. They knew everything. Like, you know, they would say things like, your mother's name is Sheila. Your father's name is Harvey. Your father had two wives. Your mother is the first wife. You have a younger sister and a younger brother. Your husband's name is Brian. Your name is Ariel. And they're saying all of this without knowing anything about me. And then they went on to describe my entire life. They told me about things to look out for at different years of my life. And then when we got to the very end of the reading, which was a couple of hours, they said to me, would you like to know the date, time, place, and circumstances of your death? And I said yes, which I now know, which was incredible, but I don't share it publicly. So anyway, the naughty readings, no way to explain how it works, because it's not like astrology where they have your date, time, and place of birth and they match it up to where the stars and the planets are. They know nothing about you, and it was written 5,000 years ago.
That's amazing. And you know, it's interesting. I mean, you know, three scientists just got awarded for entanglement theory, Nobel Prize this last year. And so it's like everything is connected. The leaves are connected. The sages are connected to us. Everything is connected. How does that leave you feel knowing that is it fate or is it destiny, right? Where are we here?
That's my favorite question. And here's what I've come to understand. And this really downloaded for me during the pandemic, since I had so much free time to sit around and think. Because as a teacher of the law of attraction and somebody who has manifested amazing stuff for more than 30 years using the law of attraction, I thought I had that all figured out. And what I have come to understand and realize is that, yes, the law of attraction is real and it does work, but it's a 101 way of living in the world, that there's actually a greater story at play if you're willing to sit back and receive your destiny. And how I came to this was that I started looking at the biggest, most amazing things that had happened to me in my life, and none of them are things that I had consciously chosen to manifest. And part of that was because my imagination has never been vast enough to imagine these things that have happened. But because things were out of control, whenever I surrendered completely and would just say, okay, God, show me the next step. Show me the next step. That's when the biggest things would happen. So it's both. You know, it's like my favorite saying is, it's a both and world. It's both the way you say it is and the way I say it is. Fate versus destiny, it's both. You know, and you can choose either way. And I'm now trying to suppress my will to a certain degree and be more open to my destiny.
Wow, that's powerful. And on that note, I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, how would others maybe follow that path? And how does it relate to the book, The Love Thief? And by the way, I want to let my listeners know you can get the book at thelovethief.com. Is that correct?
Yes.
Lovethief.com. And I want to put that out for all our listening audience. So lovethief.com. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Voices of Courage show, Ken Foster. Ariel, I am so impressed at this interview. I really love where we're going with it. And I'm so happy that you're my friend for so many years and Judy's friend. I'm curious as to what is your next journey? As you know your fate now, you know where you're fated. What as you open up to allow yourself to receive the guidance more and more, where do you think it's leading you?
You know, I honestly don't know. I was thinking about that this morning because, you know, I've spent the last 10 plus years really focused on being a love and relationship expert and teaching and coaching and doing all of that. And, you know, then this novel came through and I see that there's something coming that's related to the novel and I don't know what it is. And instead of sort of being freaked out and terrified, I'm excited, even though I can't tell you what it is. One of the things I'm excited about is just there's a big time Hollywood producer who has fallen in love with my book and is going to turn it into a streaming series. And of course, I'd very much like to be a producer on that and go to India with the crew and be involved. And so that may be part of it. But I don't know. And for the first time in my life, I'm really okay with not knowing.
Very good. Very good. Well, I guess the more to come on that one. So, you know, in the prelude to the show, I told my audience that we'd be talking about love. We'd be talking about how to go maybe deeper in love. And I think one of the things, the way to go deeper in love is to realize what's not working in our own lives, what's not working in love. You know, you've been a coach for many years. You've really helped people to evolve their love. When something's not working, what do you advise for people that, you know, let's say they're in a relationship that just really, it doesn't seem to be working. What do you say?
Well, you know, I still think professional therapy is a good way to go. Couples therapy. You know, I don't have a PhD after my name, so I don't actually coach couples. I coach mostly single people. So I think that's a great way to go because there are power dynamics at play that need talking out. And if you're not skilled, you can't do it by yourself. So I'm a big, big proponent of couples therapy. But in general, I think one of the places where people get tripped up is that they lose track of the abundance of love they already have in their life. And I recommend a daily gratitude process where you spend a few minutes each day closing your eyes, going from your head to your heart, and really seeing inside of your heart all the love you really have, whether it's your parents, your kids, your siblings, your coworkers, your best friends, your neighbors, your cats, your dogs, and really allowing your heart to fill with the abundance of love you already have, which raises your frequency, your love frequency, and makes you attractive and magnetic to having even more love.
I love it. You know, there's a wonderful song out there. All you need is love. Da, 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 da. All you need is love. Old Beatles song for those of you that are my young audience. But, You know, you say that that's a lie. We don't all that. No, we don't only.
I say it's a big fat lie.
A big fat lie. Okay. All right. Why is that? Why is that?
Well, anybody who's been married knows that love is not enough to sustain a relationship. You know, even a lot of people who get divorced still love each other, but they can't live together. You know, so all you need is love. It's just a big fat lie. What you need to have a happy, healthy, long-term, committed relationship or marriage is several other things. You need connection, compatibility, good communication, which, thank God, can be learned, a little bit of chemistry. It doesn't have to be tons of chemistry, but some chemistry. And most importantly, a shared vision for the future. You know, you are somebody who wants to be married or in relationship with somebody that you're going to live under the same roof and be together 24/7, and you both want kids and you both want to live in California. Or you're somebody who wants a long-term committed relationship, but you don't want to live together. You want to see each other 3 times a week or 1 week a month. That part's not important. What's important is that you have a lot of clarity about the kind of relationship you want to have. So love is great. And as we talked about earlier, the feelings come and go. Doesn't mean that you don't love them on the days you don't feel it, but you need to have these other elements, the connection, compatibility, communication, chemistry, and most importantly, a shared vision for the future.
A shared vision for the future. I love that. Well, okay. The book is The Love Thief. I'm going to put that back on our screen right now. Love Thief. You can get that at thelovethief.com. And I hope many of you will pick that book up, because this is a great journey into love and maybe what to do and what not to do. A lot of those are woven in there. So hope you'll check it all out. Ariel, so you wrote a book a while back called The Soulmate Secrets. Is there really such thing as a soulmate? Is that accurate, would you say?
Let me define what I believe a soulmate is. So I think a soulmate is, first and foremost, somebody you can completely be yourself with, somebody with whom you share unconditional love, and when you look into their eyes, you have the experience of being home. So if you accept that definition, then you already have lots of soulmates in your life, lots of them. And if you want a romantic soulmate partner, then the process I described a few minutes ago, the daily gratitude process, would be the thing to start incorporating, so that you're filling yourself up and you're vibrating at the frequency of love on a daily basis. But yes, there are soulmates. And yes, we do have more than one. We can have lots of soulmates at different times in our life. And most importantly to know, even soulmates, some relationships come with an expiration date. Sometimes they just end. And it doesn't mean anything happened that was bad or wrong. It's just time for the next one. So if you were married for 15 years or 20 years and had some kids, and then it's just kind of over, don't feel like you failed, right? There's another soulmate that's coming into your life for a bigger, better purpose.
Well, that's interesting, because, you know, we're here growing, we're evolving, you know, we're stepping in, we're remembering who we are at greater and greater levels and taking off the illusions so that we can see our own soul in there. And what you just said just so aligns with that, you know. It's and I love that. Don't feel bad about it. You know, it's okay. You know, we can move on to the next relationship. Same thing with friendships, same thing with even family members. Sometimes they just, you know, we just can't be around those particular members. So it's okay.
I have a category for that. So there are certain people that will never leave your life, either because they're blood relatives or you go back too far, and yet you're kind of finished with them on a lot of levels.
Yeah.
These are the people that I only see and connect with on a homeopathic level. In tiny, small doses, a few times a year, you know, just enough to say, yes, I still love you, but no, I have no time for you, because that does happen. We do grow and change. And, you know, most of us don't have time to be with the people we really, really, really want to be with, let alone the, you know, the energy vampires out there. So that's also something you can be okay with.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Well, okay. You've got a special healing yoga that you want to talk to us about today. Before you do, I'm going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to experience that with you. So we'll be right back. See the unseeable, know the unknowable, and do the impossible. This is what Ariel Ford has been doing for the last 30 plus years with writing so many best-selling books and transforming herself and her life and the lives of tens of thousands of individuals in the world. Ariel, the series, the healing yoga heart healing yoga series. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What's that about?
Yeah, so I created a bonus for anybody who orders the book from thelovethief.com. And what it is 10 videos. I went to the top 10 yoga teachers in the world, including people like Sean Korn, and asked each of them to give a little talk, a little yoga philosophy, and a yoga pose or two to heal negative emotions. So there's one on anger, one on grief, one on betrayal, one on uncertainty, depression, heartache. So these videos, I've been using them myself lately for different things, are just fantastic because in The Love Thief, my heroine, Holly, goes through all of these emotions like a roller coaster. And even though she's a non-believer and she's not doing yoga, she eventually comes to see that there are healing qualities and properties that she can do for herself. So that's what the Healing the Heart Yoga video series is.
Well, I love that. You know, let me just give a little history in that. You know, in India, in ancient India, and even modern day India, when a person had an illness or emotional and mental, emotional, physical, spiritual illness, they would go to the yogi, and the yogi would give them an asana, or what we call in America a posture, to learn to be able to hold the body in that position so the body could bring the energy in and be able to heal that particular emotion. So that's what Ariel is just talking about here. So that's a powerful giveaway for the book. So if they go and they get the book, The Love Thief, and we're going to put it up there one more time, we'll move over to Ariel. And you're going to get the asanas, the postures with some of the greatest yogis on the planet, showing you how to heal. So I love that. That's such a blessing for my audience. Thank you so much for that. And they get that at lovethief.com. Go to lovethief.com. Ariel, we're out of time. So closing thoughts.
You know, I think the only thing I want people to remember is that there's no shortage of love in the world. No matter what you're thinking, there's no shortage of love in the world. And as it says in A Course in Miracles, the only thing that can be lacking in any situation is that which you are not giving. So if you want to have more love, start giving more love.
Powerful words. Thank you so much for being here. And I look forward to seeing you at the Women's Wisdom event coming up soon. You're going to be one of the speakers. So my audience, if you want to find out about that, you can go to womenswisdom.net, womenswisdom.net. Ariel, thank you so much for being here and everything you do.
Thank you. Thank you.
And for all of you, I want to thank you for being on this show again today. This was another powerful edition of the Voices of Courage show, as you just heard. So I hope you share that with your family and your friends and your business associates, anybody that's looking to have more love, more joy, more happiness in their life. This is what this is all about. And until next time, I hope you can realize into your own heart, love, and be able to see the unseeable, know the unknowable, and do the impossible.